This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Future Farm Botanicals Liquid Turmeric Liposome Complex, a natural solution to chronic pain. Future Farm's liquid turmeric with liposomes and nanotechnology delivers maximum absorption for effective pain relief. Sourced and manufactured in the United States, this product contains 1,600 milligrams of curcumin and powerful antioxidant properties. This plant-based curcumin is used to possibly reduce inflammation, block proteins that trigger swelling, and intercept inflammatory pathways, significantly decreasing inflammatory responses. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Don't live with pain when there's an all-natural, science-based remedy that works without adverse side effects. Get free shipping on all of your orders at myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla. Layla's here. She's our nutritionist in residence. Together, we endeavor to answer your questions, which are sent to us via radio program at AOL.com. And Layla, we got quite a few in the mailbag.
We do. How are you doing, Dr. Hoffman?
Good, good. Summer is progressing. I'm feeling, healthy and vibrant because finally, the gym's closed, so I can't work out in the city. So I'm spending as much time as I can. And now that the water is warm enough to swim,
good.
I'm swimming a lot. I'm cycling outside.
Great.
I'm starting to feel that summer vitality.
Yeah, it's nice to be out of doors.
Welcome after the 3 months of lockdown here in New York. And we had a pretty serious lockdown. So it's a relief to get out there. And, I was like riding on my bike. I took a 26-mile bike ride. And I realized like on the final leg of my bike ride, the entire morning, I hadn't thought of COVID-19.
Yay!
There was like,
nice?
Several hours of that. I didn't see anybody with masks. I didn't see, there was no harsh reminder of the constraints because I'm whizzing along on my bicycle, and pretty sure that any COVID-19 aerosolized particles are whizzing by me, or are destroyed by the ultraviolet light and the wind velocity.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's a pretty
Sunlight
safe
is
activity,
good.
I think.
Yeah.
Before we get to questions, and by the way, how's your summer going? You have a construction
good.
Project.
Yeah, we do. We do. And it's ongoing and it's good. And the garden is growing. We have plenty of fresh vegetables now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's exciting.
But you're living in a trailer.
But we're living in a trailer because it's a construction site.
Uh-huh.
So we're still working on the house and that's going along.
Uh-huh.
It's trotting merrily along.
So we have like a soundtrack of like dueling banjos. You're living in a trailer and...
you could set that to the background. You could.
Right.
But it's quite comfy and it's doing its job.
Actually, we've done some podcasts where you have been in the trailer.
I've been in the trailer.
And there's kind of an interesting acoustic in the trailer.
Because it's a sardine can.
Exactly.
It's about 208 square feet. And if it was raining, you would hear it.
Or like...
You would hear it.
One day there was like the threat of hail and we would have heard like the...
Yeah.
Like the slam of the hail on the
exactly.
aluminum roof.
Right.
Okay, so this is better because we're actually physically in the same place.
Yay!
Although socially distanced.
Yes.
So both of us had tests, by the way. We had antibody tests. We were negative.
Yep.
That does not preclude a acute
infection.
Does
it mean we didn't get infected the day after the test?
Actually I had some conversations. I spoke to an immunologist, not per se an immunologist, but he's an expert on immunity yesterday.
Yeah.
And he agreed that the antibody test can be a little squirrely because you can have a faded antibody.
Right. What if we had COVID in February?
Right.
The antibodies would be gone by now.
But it does not mean that you do not have some measure of immunity to it because there's another arm of the immune system may confer some immunity against it. So the test is, we used to call it an immunity passport. You know, it was like, oh yeah, everybody get tested because we can go back to work. We're safe. And, I don't mean to, impugn the value of testing, but it's a little more nuanced. Anyway.
Yeah.
Coming back to the, you know, and obviously we're taking questions on all and sundry because the ills of mankind have not dissipated merely because we are laser focused on COVID-19
right.
the past few months.
Right.
I have an article here about COVID-19 and it's really along the lines of something that I've been saying for a long time, which is the linkage between COVID-19 and our chronic non-communicable diseases, or to abbreviate NCDs. And there was an article in the British Medical Journal. This one's also from the British Medical Journal. Mm-hmm. They seem to be doing a whole series of articles on this theme. And they're using a soccer analogy. It's like, you know, kids who are like chasing the soccer ball, somewhere away from the goal. We're leaving the goal wide open for a pandemic, which is the pandemic of degenerative diseases.
Yes.
You know, well, so let's remember that COVID-19 and these degenerative diseases are actually part and parcel of the same overall problem.
Yeah.
Vulnerability to COVID-19 is associated with some of the same things that are killing hundreds and thousands of millions of people every year. Heart disease, diabetes, stroke, cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And so this one is entitled COVID-19 and Metabolic Syndrome. Could diet be the key? Mm-hmm. Well, this isn't the first person who's suggested that, but it's eloquently stated in the British Medical Journal. And I posted this on Facebook if you follow us on social media. In the current COVID-19 pandemic, governments mandate social distancing and good hand hygiene, but little attention is paid to the potential impact of diet on health outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
Hooray!
Yeah.
Poor diet is the most significant contributor to the burden of chronic lifestyle-related diseases like obesity, type 2 diabetes, and cardiovascular disease. Well, they're echoing my sentiments.
Yeah.
They say as of May 30th, 2020, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reported that among COVID-19 cases, the two most common underlying health conditions were cardiovascular disease and diabetes. So they say these conditions, by the way, statistics from UK, 2/3 of people in the UK have fallen seriously ill with COVID-19 were overweight or obese. 99% of deaths in Italy have been in patients with pre-existing conditions such as hypertension, diabetes, and heart disease. These conditions, collectively known as metabolic syndrome, are linked to impaired immune function.
Yeah.
And they result in more severe symptoms and complications from COVID-19 and death.
Yeah.
So, I scroll down. What's the answer? Restriction of dietary carbohydrates.
Really?
What a concept! What a concept.
Right.
British Medical Journal's on to something here. Is a simple and safe intervention which results in rapid improvements in glycemic control and can be implemented alongside usual care in a medical or domestic setting. While the pathophysiology of COVID-19 is multifactorial, insulin resistance is among the strongest determinants of impaired metabolic function. And they cite a statistic which I cited in a recent article, one of our blogs. If you haven't yet subscribed to our newsletter, please do, because you'll get this information. You know, usually
and it's free.
A couple of months before it's in, at the very least, maybe a few years before it's in British Medical Journal. They say since 88% of the U.S. population is metabolically unhealthy.
Yes.
And that's per a study that I reviewed there.
Yeah.
The extent to which it contributes to the severity of COVID-19 infection is likely to be significant.
Yeah.
Therefore, the adoption of dietary advice for people with underlying metabolic syndrome, as proposed in the UK, I didn't know it was proposed in the UK, should be more widely endorsed by governments and policymakers globally to mitigate the burden of pre-existing metabolic disease in those who contract COVID-19 now and into the future. And even if you don't get COVID-19, which the majority of us won't, you're much more likely to get sick and die of something else.
Yeah, yes. In fact.
Although, you know, we are
heart disease is still the number one killer.
Yep.
So.
And are all the metabolic consequences. And even certain cancers are very much associated with insulin resistance.
Oh, yes. There's an intimate association between insulin and cancer.
Right.
We've known that since the 1980s, in fact.
Permit us to gloat.
Yes.
But you know, look, this is front and center in the discussion in mainstream medical journals now, which I think is great.
Finally.
Yeah.
Good.
Do you feel good. Somewhat vindicated?
I totally feel vindicated. I could do a jig if I didn't have this microphone on my okay. lapel right now.
But you know, it's nice because I think we labor in the fields, and sometimes you know it ain't too gratifying because you know the media broadcast messages of skepticism about paleo diet and about vitamins and supplements and some of the things that we've been ahead of the curve on, and low-carb dieting, and you know, you used to work for Atkins, and you remember how reviled Atkins was.
Oh my goodness.
And they didn't treat him seriously.
Right, and I was reviled by my own classmates. I was an undergrad at the time.
Right.
You caught a lot of flack. People would look at me and just...
Like,
how could you work there?
You've fallen off the path. And,
But I had the head of the department, one of my professors also... pull me aside and say, I'm really glad you're there.
Uh-huh. But I can't say anything because of my position. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Was back in 2002.
It was a professional gamble. It really was a professional gamble because, you know, you could have been stigmatized in your career. But I think you're a sensible iconoclast. Mm. You know, you tend to challenge orthodoxy in a lot of ways. And, you know, I think... it kind of goes with the territory in terms of your personal orientation.
Right.
Is that you're, you know, you don't just accept the blind indoctrination that you got in dietitian school.
Right.
And, you know, in your master's program. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think you, from a professional standpoint, I think you're being rewarded by being in a, what is now becoming more a mainstream of thought.
And, you know, you and I, we've known the truth for all along because we see it reflected back in our patients, in their health, the improvements, in their labs, in their biochemistries, in everything, even their moods, their mental health.
Right.
We see that. So there's the evidence besides the scientific evidence that so much of mainstream science would not look at.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So that whole groupthink apparently is starting to go away, which... I'm very gratified by.
Yep. All right. Let's get to questions. Radio program at AOL.com is the destination for questions. Keep coming. Keep those questions coming. Even though it's the summer, we're still at it, fielding them. So let's hear what we got.
We have an email from Rick. Any thoughts on using this mode to control viral infections? It's far UVC light. Safely kills airborne coronaviruses.
And, you know, I actually, early on in the pandemic, I said one of the areas for research and technology, and, you know, in this time when the economy is so battered, is, you know, I hope there's some young engineers and entrepreneurs who are working to develop systems so that when we do go back to theaters and concerts and sports events in these big venues, that they will have ways of cleaning the air.
Yes.
And there should be ways to A, filter it, and B, inactivate the virus. And one of them is UV light. I mean, clearly, you know, the old expression, sunlight is the best disinfectant.
Yeah.
And UV light is the component of sunlight that tends to zap viral envelopes and break them up. And so, yes, it totally makes sense.
Yes. Now, this far UVC light is different from conventional germicidal UVC light, which is used to disinfect unoccupied spaces, but
with the UV light is that it gives you cataracts and it can give you skin cancer.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. But this far UVB light has been found to be helpful. There's a new paper that extends this research to seasonal coronaviruses, which are similar to the SARS-CoV-2 virus, which causes COVID-19. So there is a lot of promise there that using this far UVC light, which doesn't cause any damage to human cells, can be used.
I used to have one in my room when I was growing up, and it made my Jimi Hendrix poster look really cool.
Oh, wow.
It was like, you remember so
that Jimi Hendrix poster?
The black light posters, you know, like.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I wonder, though, if I did irrevocable damage to myself.
You're not going to know, right?
Right.
Oh, my gosh. So this far UVC light can be safer to use in occupied spaces, hospitals, okay, buses, but planes.
The other way to do it is mm-hmm. to, you know, circulate the air through a unit that puts the UV light through the airstream, and maybe that's mm-hmm. one of the ways. I mean, mm-hmm. I think some ingenious people are going to figure that out.
This could be the way back. Yeah. I don't know why that hasn't been more on the forefront.
And it's a great opportunity for, kind of healthy green spaces. You know, it's I think,
yes.
If I was a young engineer, you mm-hmm. know, with expertise in HVAC, I would be working hard at it. Mm. And, you know, there's a lot of entrepreneurship and money to be made in this field.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you, Rick, for that question. We have one from Michael.
I'm hoping they have one by November when I had tickets to see Billy Joel in May, and it got blown away. But they rescheduled it for November. I hope they have that because it's going to be in the Garden.
Oh, good. That's yeah, but the
Garden.
Venue.
Yeah, but the Garden's like what? You know, 26,000 people or something like that. I don't know that they're going to let that many people go into a space in November in New York City.
Maybe they'll block off a seat between you and the next person or something like
that.
Then
they'll charge me double for my seat because I have to have two seats?
No, they'll just go out of business like so many. Right. Madison Square Garden, it'll unfortunately.
I don't want it to be virtual.
Right, no, right. Oh, yeah.
It's
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Are we all not sick of virtual?
Right.
Since this lockdown?
I don't want to watch Billy Joel on my iPhone.
Right. You know? Which is so weird because so many young people at concerts, they've got their phones up and they're looking at it through the phone.
Yeah.
And even some artists,
right,
like Chrissy Hynde of The Pretender, said, put your phones away. What are you doing?
No, it's like,
I'm here. But enjoy the concert.
I know,
it's
but
me.
it's like hold your lighter up and it's like a phone. You know, it's the phone with like that candle effect.
But they're actually looking through it, not as something to look at later, but you're missing you're missing life.
At least a lighter, a Zippo lighter, had a dual purpose. You could light your joint, and you could hold it up, you know, too.
That reminds me of a Doobie Brothers concert around a big mushroom cloud.
Right.
Oh, my God.
You didn't need to bring your own. You just could inhale.
We're hungry after that. My goodness. We have an email from Michael. Hi, Dr. Hoffman.
By the way, the statute of limitations has expired on those drug offenses, so, you know.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
All right. I better get in my lawsuit on time. Okay. This comes from Michael. On a recent podcast with Dr. Dana Cohen, author of Quench, wonderful book.
Yeah.
You passed that on
mm-hmm.
to me when it came out. Wonderful book from Dr. Cohen. Recommended that people drink 8 ounces of water before each meal. You concurred. But doesn't that dilute digestive enzymes, that can result in impaired digestion?
Two schools of thought. You know, I used to be macrobiotic. Hmm. And in the macrobiotic dictum, you know, there's a lot of rules. They said, don't drink with a meal. Just eat your meal because you will dilute the essential hydrochloric acids necessary to, and digestive enzymes. And, you know, I don't know if that orthodoxy really holds true.
Hmm.
And, you know, I notice also there's some wisdom in the way that kids eat. And when kids eat and you put like a, you know, their little sippy cup next to them, they eat. And then sometimes with encouragement, sometimes without encouragement, they take their sippy cup and they drink and they slosh it down. To moisturize the food.
Yeah.
Because there's something about, you know, dry food that may make it harder for the digestive enzymes mm-hmm. to get to the food.
Or just harder to swallow.
Harder to swallow,
for some people, yeah.
Right. And then the other thing about eating is that it is essentially dehydrating. Because you're taking, you know, something that is solid
mm-hmm.
and, you know, it, and especially if there's sodium in it, it's going to be dehydrating. So, look, one thing about drinking a lot before you eat, I mean, isn't that a strategy for satiating,
absolutely.
To tending the appetite a little bit?
A key thing here, people think they're hungry when they're actually thirsty.
Okay.
And these are people who typically don't get thirsty. They don't feel thirst. They need to be reminded to drink.
Right.
So, and they're wondering, well, why am I hungry? I just ate an hour and a half ago. Well, you could be thirsty. Drink a glass of water. 8 ounces is not a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Drink it
mm-hmm.
and wait 10 minutes.
Right.
And if you're hungry, then you're hungry.
Right.
Otherwise, you were just thirsty. It's also a good strategy for those who are trying to eat less.
Right.
lose weight,
right.
to drink a glass of water before a meal. But it doesn't have to be right before a meal either. It could be 20,
right.
30 minutes before
right.
a meal. It could still be filling that way.
Mm-hmm.
And hey, I take my supplements with my meals, so I'm mm-hmm. definitely drinking some water during, because I start taking my supplements midway through the meal.
Right. I try not to snack. And, you know, one of
snack.
The things that
I rarely
which
snack.
Is admirable,
I'm not hungry.
You know, I guess you just accustom yourself to it, or maybe mm-hmm. that's just you constitutionally. But one of the strategies is if I feel like, you know, a little like I want to gnaw on something, I might say, you know, let's make myself a cup of coffee. And mm-hmm. it's decaf.
Yeah.
And it's satisfying and
yes.
flavorful.
Mm-hmm.
And or, you know, it could be a cup of tea.
Yeah.
And, you know, it sort of, the feeling passes, you know,
right.
so that I can have that, mm-hmm. you know, it's a little intermittent fast if you have, you know, lunch at 12 and dinner at 7.
Yeah.
Without a snack.
Mm-hmm. I think a great idea is to have a mug of broth.
Oh.
Bone broth, mm-hmm. soup, consomme.
Okay.
Something like that. And I think it's a wonderful way to start a meal, like your lunch or your dinner. For those who feel like they overeat,
right.
when you start with a bowl of soup,
yeah.
you're going to eat a lot less of the solid food.
Mm-hmm.
I know I do.
Right.
If I start with even a cup
yeah.
of soup, I'm like, wow, I'm semi-full now, so I'll have to take the rest of my dinner home or
right.
something.
So to come back to this theme, I think
yeah.
that I agreed,
mm-hmm.
But, you know, maybe that would have been the point to have this little discussion about the pros and cons, because,
yeah.
you know, you don't want to slosh a lot of liquid into your food, because theoretically you could dilute your digestive
True.
Enzymes and hydrochloric
True.
Acid.
But also be ruled by your thirst. If you're thirsty, I want you to drink.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want you to drink.
But, you know, let's take an example from the champion eaters. Who's the guy who always wins the Coney Island?
Oh, God. What was his
yeah.
name?
He wins
he
every
ate
year.
75 of them. And
oh, yeah.
I never want to watch that because I think I would throw up.
Oh, I know. It's.
I've
it's,
never watched. I can't watch that.
But an essential part of that routine is they have to take in liquid.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
To stretch and expand
right.
and stretch and expand. And oh, my. Wow.
But he's not even an obese person. He just is like.
Yeah.
It's like
he's trained himself.
He's like a Zen.
For that
a
competition.
Zen master of.
Choking down 75 hot dogs.
Yeah.
In 30. That's just crazy. Was it 30 minutes? I don't even know the length of time.
Yeah.
But I always hear about it the next morning on the radio, on the radio news. Anyway, Dr. Cohen's book, Quench, is absolutely wonderful. I would recommend everybody pick up that book. We get a good 40% of our water intake from our food,
mm-hmm.
and I'm talking about some good quality produce, mostly.
Mm-hmm.
And she's got some great ideas on how to put food together to make sure that you are quenching
mm-hmm.
your
right.
body properly. It's not just about the water you drink,
mm-hmm.
but it's about getting the electrolytes and
right.
the nutrients that are in the food
right.
along with that water.
Right.
It's a whole matrix.
Because, frankly,
it's a really good book.
Frankly, if it was a book about, like, everybody should drink 8 ounces of glasses of water, how much could you write?
No.
You know, so that she
so
really expands on the
yeah.
concept of
yeah.
hydration. And,
yeah.
you know, there's actually some interesting research, you know, some of it's in the book, some of it's even come out subsequently, that shows that people's focus and concentration is reduced when they're underhydrated.
Oh, yeah.
Now,
they're more
go,
fatigued and it, they don't know why.
It can go the other
it's
way.
Like a low level
if you
fatigue.
Overhydrate,
mm-hmm.
especially without electrolytes, you can actually get lightheaded. And, you know, this actually happens to runners sometimes when they're very thirsty.
Water intoxication.
They become water intoxicated.
Yeah.
And you can die. There are people actually in the distress tents who have hyponatremia.
Yes.
They've taken too
That's
much
low
water.
Low sodium because it's right. too much water. Yes.
Yeah, and the brain swells under
oh.
those circumstances.
Wow.
It can be fatal.
Right.
So you need the water, but you also need the corresponding electrolytes, and you need some sodium.
Yeah.
If in the hot weather to replace it, especially if you're exercising.
Mm-hmm.
I sweat buckets when I exercise,
mm-hmm.
and then I...
Don't be afraid of salt.
Then, you know, I make sure I have some pickles, I have some...
Yeah, even drink the brine a little bit, if it's good stuff.
I've done...
The lacto...
The brine is supposed to be
fermented.
Helpful for cramps. It's an
yes.
old trick, is that it helps muscle cramps.
Yeah. It's got to be the good fermented, lacto-fermented... lactic acid fermented pickles, not the vinegar fermentation. Although that kind of tastes a little good too, but yeah. So, Michael, what I would say to you is, you know, don't glop down a whole lot of water before a meal and see how you feel. Maybe you don't like to take any water before a meal if it's causing you not to finish your food.
Listen to your body.
Or exactly, listen to your body. That's the best. It will tell you if we would only listen.
Right, and the other point to be made about hydration is what not to have. You know, sugary beverages, juices, they're just a Trojan horse for all kinds of extra calories and chemicals that we don't need, you know. And alcoholic beverages. I mean, ultimately, what did you say about wine? You know, you had an interesting take on wine the other day.
Right. Should I drink red wine for health? No. First of all, I will never tell somebody who doesn't drink, a teetotaler, to start drinking red wine.
Some cardiologists do.
I know. I think it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
People, remember that alcohol is still a neurotoxin.
Yeah.
If you're trying to lose weight or your metabolism is sluggish, it's only going to exacerbate that for you too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The other thing is there's not a whole lot of resveratrol in that Canonu grape wine from Sardinia. You would have to drink many, many, many bottles. Then you'll have to go on dialysis or something, right?
Right?
So forget it. Take a resveratrol supplement.
Right.
That's the way to do it. Red wine for health?
Nah,
I don't think so.
Yeah.
And the medicinal dose, people don't realize what cardiologists may recommend, is 3.5 ounces 3 times a week. 3.5 ounces is 7 tablespoons. Everybody tonight, go home and measure 7 tablespoons of wine and say, what?
Right.
Yeah, that's about the amount you would take in a cup of NyQuil.
Don't you see some people will say, my husband and I split a bottle of wine every night.
That's 5 glasses of wine that you're splitting.
That's a lot of wine.
And one of you is drinking faster than the other.
Right.
So
right.
One of you is getting 2 and the other is getting 3 or some other number. That could be a lot.
That's a lot.
That could be a lot.
And the body has to metabolize that as a toxin.
Right.
You know, I'm like so not drinking these days.
That's
and I
great.
Used to have, you know.
That's great.
But I mean, not so much like I'm
I've made
on,
it more
on the
sporadic.
Wagon. It just I've kind of like lost it.
Yeah.
Next
time I go eat in a Japanese restaurant, which I'm dying to do with all this lockdown, I'm definitely having some sake.
I like the taste occasionally, but I can take it or leave it, you know. And it's like.
I just like to drink it with my sushi. Sashimi.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just because
It's these little rituals that are, you know, so appealing. But you know, every day,
and
day in and day out is
No. And people remember alcohol is a proxy to sugar. You gave up that dessert, but now you're having alcohol. It's the same thing. It demands to be metabolized first, the same way the sugar does.
Yeah.
Therefore you're slowing down your metabolism. If you were in ketosis, you've now really slowed that down. And if you're having a half a bottle of wine a night, you've knocked it out.
You know what's fun is going to parties or gatherings and talking to drunk people. when I have like a little half glass of wine that I'm nursing. And you know, and I'm kind of like, there's a little, you get a little contact high from talking to people who are kind of drunk.
Yeah.
And then you realize like,
it's not like marijuana.
They're really drunk.
It's not like the Doobie Brothers concert.
Right. When you're drunk and they're drunk, it's like less obvious.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh my gosh.
It's weird. Okay. So, you know, again, it's not so much that I'm,
And having that aperitif, whether it's a cocktail or a glass of wine before dinner, you're going to eat more dinner because it's a hypoglycemic.
Right.
It's lowering your blood sugar.
And it relaxes the stomach, and that's why, you know, look, much bigger margin on alcohol. That's why they say, would you like a drink? Would you like a drink? Because they're going to make, you know, the cost.
Exactly.
As opposed to the filet mignon, where they're going to maybe have a 40% markup on that meat. You know, so it's a strategy to get you to reduce your inhibitions and eat more.
Yes. And that's what happens.
Yeah.
So
don't do that unless you want to do that. All right. So let's pause because we divide our podcast in 2 parts. And in part 2, give us a preview of what we're going to talk about.
So I just got my lipid panel back and it doesn't look good.
Uh-oh. Let's deal with it when we return. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Radio program at AOL.com, the destination for questions. We'll answer some more when we get back. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.